From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Since 1995, students at the University Laboratory High School in Urbana have undertaken a pretty ambitious social studies project, an oral history from the community. Their latest project is in the form of a two-part podcast called Over the Wall, Remembering Life Behind the Iron Curtain. It features a dozen interviews with people in Illinois who experienced life growing up in the former Soviet Union and discusses the legacy of the Cold War. Here's a clip.
I think there was kind of general fear of America because of the Cold War, and the arms race just reached a peak during my childhood. It was the early 80s, and there was so much rhetoric about, you know, nuclear weapons and drills and so on that I would hear like an airplane or I see like, a shooting star, and I was like terrified and thought this is already the nuclear. America is bombing us. So there was kind of generic fear.
We had duck and cover when I was in elementary school, and I think all the way through middle school. We were 10 miles from ground zero, so hiding under the desk would not really have happened to be very useful, but we still did those atomic bomb drills probably every month. You know what those desks look like. It wasn't really going to protect us from an atomic bomb, especially in a 10-mile radius.
You just heard Carol Leff speaking there. She's a professor emerita of political science at the University of Illinois. I actually took a class from her in the 90s. Her father worked in intelligence in Northern Virginia because he spoke Czech. And before Carol, you heard Valeria Sobol, a professor of Slavic languages, also at the U of I, who grew up in Kyiv, Ukraine, when it was under Soviet control. They're two of the Central Illinois voices featured in the audio documentary. We thought now, the week of the third anniversary of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, when Russia is so much back in the news, would be an important time to discuss the over-the-wall documentary with some of the students behind it. We're joined now by Diza Baryshnikov. She's now a junior at UNI High. Diza, welcome to the 21st Show.
Hello. I'm so excited to be here.
Glad to have you. Also with us is sophomore Krishna Jaswal. Krishna, welcome to the show to you as well.
Thank you.
And we are also joined by Melissa Shepline, a social studies teacher at UNI High, who helped lead the project. Melissa, welcome back.
Thank you.
Listeners, we also want to hear from you. Maybe you remember what that was like, U.S.-Russia relations during the Cold War. Maybe you or your family member grew up on the other side of the Iron Curtain in Eastern Europe or in Russia. Join the conversation at 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. All right, Melissa, I'm going to start with you. How did you settle on doing a podcast about life behind the Iron Curtain?
Sure. So every time we do a project, each project takes about 2.5 years or 2 years because it's created by students and it just moves along kind of slowly. And so when we were initially brainstorming the topic, it was summer 2022 and Russia's invasion of Ukraine had obviously just happened a couple months earlier. And that was on a lot of the minds of my students that I would say that current event was followed pretty closely by our school community. We had lots of outside guest speakers come in and do teach-ins about the topic. And we had a few students who were Ukrainian-American, and we also have Russian-American students in our school population. So there was a lot of conversation about the invasion, and I think the students expressed just a general curiosity about learning more about the region.
What are some of the topics you've covered in the past?
In the past, we've done the 9/11 project, which was looking at what happened here in Central Illinois on September 11th, 2001. That was inspired by the 20th anniversary. We've also looked at gun violence in the Champaign-Urbana community, and we've looked at issues surrounding immigration, refugees, and asylum seekers here in Champaign-Urbana.
All right, let's listen to another piece of tape. This documentary includes a lot of firsthand accounts of life in the Soviet Union in the 1970s and 80s, even about more mundane things that maybe you don't read about in history books. Let's listen to Zuza, if I'm saying that right, Zuza Gilley, who grew up in Budapest.
When I first saw an ad of a toothpaste in a German magazine that had blue and red stripes in it, I just felt like, this is insane. How can they make toothpaste so beautiful? But, you know, we had plain toothpaste, but we could afford it, right?
Krishna, Well, what did you learn about people's perceptions of America during that time and the West in general? I guess that was German toothpaste she was talking about.
I learned a lot of different things, especially since a lot of the interviewees were from different parts, from either the USSR or Eastern Bloc nations. And some people, there were fears, but there were also just a lot of curiosity about what a life was like in America.
And Diza, your father, Yuli Baryshnikov, is from Moscow, was interviewed for the documentary. We actually have another clip. Let's listen to him speaking about language and learning English in the former Soviet Union.
English was taught sort of by hearsay, but English was taught extremely poorly. So, like, I learned some vocabulary, but, you know, like, we never learned how to speak. I knew how to read, but the pronunciation was, like, completely garbled. And, you know, you were told that, okay, so the English is so difficult. But, you know, as a result, nobody was ever exposed to English speakers. Nobody was comfortable speaking. So, yeah, so I didn't speak English at all until I sort of came to the West.
So Diza, did you learn things about his life that maybe you didn't know before working on the podcast?
Yeah, so, I don't know, one of the things that I found really interesting was going into it, I was sort of going to be like, oh yeah, I sort of know these stories. I know my dad. I know what he was like. I know sort of his basic life in the Soviet Union. But when he was sort of asked questions about sort of formally of his history of getting a place or finding a place in Moscow, I was sort of able to learn a lot about my grandfather and my great-grandparents, who I don't really hear about in more of a their life sense. It's more of a, oh, they were like this or they were like that. And I sort of, I don't know, I really enjoyed being able to sort of hear their stories brought out in a more formal way where I could, you know, see their struggles and not just as a family relation.
If you had to boil it down, if you're willing to share one or two maybe of those particular stories that really jumped out at you or you saw in a different way than you had understood, you know, from years of just growing up with your family.
Yeah, I don't know. One that really sticks with me is that my my grandfather, when he was trying to find his way to Moscow because his parents were killed in concentration camps, he jumped on the back of a train and rode all the way to Moscow in freezing weather, and he somehow was able to find his way inside of the train. And if he hadn't, he would have probably froze to death out there. And so the fact that he was able to get inside the train car and find his way to Moscow and sort of start a life and start a family was one of those stories I hadn't really heard as much because it's like painful to talk about, you know.
Yeah. Wow. You think about that. I mean, our petty little complaints about, you know, standing in the cold waiting for a bus or something like that. When you hear a story like that, it's so powerful. Let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st Show. We are talking today about a oral history project called Over the Wall, Remembering Life Behind the Iron Curtain. It takes the form of a two-part podcast, and it's produced by students at the UNIHA, University Laboratory High School in Urbana. My guests are two of the students who worked on this, Diza Baryshnikov and Krishna Jaswal, as well as a social studies teacher at UNIHA, Melissa Shepline. 800-222-9455 if you want to join us today. Krishna, what did you know about life in the former Soviet Union prior to working on this podcast?
So actually, I was a part of the eighth grade class that conducted the interviews with a lot of the interviewees that you hear in the podcast. So there was a pretty long research project that we did before those interviews. And through that like unit, I learned a lot about what life was like and like daily life. And sort of a lot of that I learned was confirmed then by the interviews. And yeah.
What jumped out at you about differences in what daily life would have been there versus for people here in America or elsewhere in the world?
I know one quote that kind of sticks out to me is about an interviewee who was talking about how a lot of people would travel to like other countries or cities to find clothing since where they lived was the clothing options were very limited.
Oh, amazing. All right, let's listen to another clip. This is from part one of the documentary podcast, Over the Wall, about life in the Soviet Union. This is Eddie Derhemi, who lives in central Illinois now, but is originally from Albania.
Remember, my first daughter was born in 1987. I didn't have milk to breastfeed her, so we had to buy the milk. But to buy the milk, you had to wake up at 2 a.m., and stay until around 7 a.m. in the line. And you had to wake up at 2 a.m. because otherwise you would be at that point in the line in which there would be no more milk. Both my ex-husband and I had to both wake up very early. And there were two lines. The women and the men were in separate lines. So he would be in the men's line, I would be in the women's line, and wait until the milk would come so that we could secure the milk for the baby because the quantity was measured. But it was for everything. It was lines for potatoes, lines for, like, I don't remember lines for onions, but lines for flour, lines for coffee. We never tried bananas, for example. So there was no line for bananas because we only had, I only tried some bananas when I was probably 10 or 12 years old. I remember those came from Cuba, which was a communist country, so they brought us bananas with a shipment. That is the only time for a few months there were bananas. We saw what they were. After that, I had bananas when I left the country when I was 26.
What an amazing story. Do any of you remember the first time you tried bananas in your life?
No, but they're always available at my house.
Exactly. Exactly. This is the point, right? Because we don't know because it's just so abundant for us. Melissa, talk about the shape of this project. And maybe we can start with how do you find guests to interview?
Oh, that's a great question. So we do lots of sort of networking, old school networking, which is a really good experience for the students. In this case, of course, the University of Illinois was very useful for us, given that there is a Slavic Studies department and there's a center on campus that's focused on Eastern Europe. And often when we will do pre-interviews with possible people that we want to invite to the project, we always end that pre-interview with who else should we talk to? Also, as I mentioned, we did have several of our interviewees this time happened to be uni parents. And so we did spread the word in our parent community to see if anybody would be willing to share their stories with us. And we are very grateful that several people from different parts of Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union came forward with that request.
So so you mentioned pre-interviews. I think for people who don't work in radio or podcasting, maybe don't understand how all the work that goes into, you're not just bringing a tape recorder in and having a spontaneous conversation with someone.
Yeah, so we have a team of students that is specifically devoted to the interview work, and they conduct several pre-interviews, which is like about a 30-minute interview on Zoom with possible people that we want to learn more about. And the pre-interviews serve several purposes. One, just to kind of educate the students more about the topic. Even though they do some of their own research in advance, they always learn a lot through the pre-interviews. But it's also to sort of get a sense of who we'd like to invite to come into the studio for that aspect of the project. We want to make sure that we have a diversity of stories and perspectives. And so that interview team will always... we're actually at that phase right now for our current project, which is on women's rights and women's history. We always have meetings to kind of talk about who might we invite and kind of narrow it down for the final invitations.
And then the students go out and actually do the interviews. Do they have people working with them? Do you have to do equipment training? How does that work?
Yeah, so the students doing the pre-interviews are actually older students like Deeza and Krishna. But the actual students that conduct the interviews are eighth graders. And so those students will be trained by the older students. The more technical training happens here at WILL with Jason Croft and Steve Mork using the soundboard. And then we come over and conduct the actual interviews take about 90 minutes to 2 hours. So they're quite long. And the eighth graders have spent a few weeks preparing for that experience. And there's actually a team of about five eighth graders that will be involved in the interview. Not all of them will be the interviewer, but we have other roles for students to do in the studio. so that those eighth graders have that experience of actually conducting the interview. And then it's our older students that will, in the second year, do all the production work and the script writing and kind of take all of those interviews and turn them into the podcasts.
Yeah, yeah, big, big mound of tape and try and make sense of it is always one of the biggest challenges. All right, let me reintroduce our conversation. If you're just joining us, this is the 21st show. We are talking about a two-part podcast documentary. It's called Over the Wall, Remembering Life, Behind the Iron Curtain. It's produced by students at the University Laboratory High School in Urbana. They do this every 2 years or so. They produce another oral history project from the community. My guests are two of the students who worked on this, Deeza Baryshnikov and Krishna Jaswal. And we're also speaking with a social studies teacher at Uni High who helped lead the project, Melissa Shepline. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. Then a little later in the hour, we're going to be talking with Megan Gorman, who is a wealth advisor and has written a book, a new book called All the President's Money. It looks at the finances of the men who've been president from George Washington to Donald Trump. That's all coming up here on the 21st show. Stay with us. This is the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Deeza Baryshnikov, Krishna Jaswal. They're two students at Uni High in Urbana, the University Laboratory High School, as well as social studies teacher Melissa Shepline. Together, they are some of the people who worked on a two-part audio podcast documentary looking at life in the Soviet Union and other Eastern Bloc countries during the Cold War. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. I should say the name of this project is called Over the Wall, Remembering Life Behind the Iron Curtain. So, Deeza, let me come back to you. So, or Krishna, I don't know which of you maybe worked more on this aspect of the project, but so the interviews are done. You have hours of conversation. You have all this research. How do you begin to think about turning this into a story, into a project that people will want to listen to?
Yeah, so this is my favorite part, is looking at all of the interviews, and this is why I love the production team, is you sort of get to sort of dive into all of these just like hours and hours of stories, and you can either listen to it or read it, and it's just really fun trying to look through all of these different stories and answers to questions that people have, and sort of try and find some storyline or section that really stands out to you. And we'll sort of take these storylines and sections and turn them into project ideas, or we'll figure out how many parts we want for our podcast, or if we want to do a longer podcast, shorter podcast. And it's really fun sort of trying to find a bunch of different really important elements of the stories and of the history that people have. And, you know, once we have sort of quotes that we like and we have a storyline, we'll put it together and we'll add narration, record it eventually after lots of rough drafts and editing. We'll record the narration and we'll edit it all together. And then we have sort of our first rough draft of the podcast, and we keep editing.
And Deeza, let me ask you. So we talked on the show earlier this week about Ukraine and Russia. They've obviously been in the news a lot lately. As you know, to the extent you follow current events, I wonder if this project gave you a new perspective on what's been happening over there.
Yeah, it did, definitely, because it sort of, one of the things that really stood out was sort of the level of censorship that you don't really realize is just such a part of everyday life in the Soviet Union and Russia now. And it sort of, it has this level of, well, what is the news going on inside the country, where The people who have like contributed to our podcast are people who left the Soviet Union, and they, most of them, sort of had some negative ideas of sort of the government and what was going on. And so it's sort of there is some block that I find interesting, that you're not entirely sure of what news is being spread, or what sort of the general rhetoric is online or on news sites. And I think especially with sort of current censorship of those sort of free radio stations where they're sort of documenting what is happening in the country, I think that's very, very much a sort of a key element of this new current issue.
Krishna, what about you? How did this project affect your sort of understanding or thinking about what's happening over there?
I would say I kind of got an idea of how, like, you hear the things that are going on in the news and you hear, like, these headlines, you read them, but at the end, there's also a lot of, like, personal stories of what's going on. As we were making the podcast, we heard so many personal stories of, like, yeah, these big things are going on where these interviewees are living, but along with that comes a lot of personal stories, and I feel like that can also be applied to current issues of, yeah, you hear the big newses and you hear the headlines, but there's also so many personal stories that go with the people that are living through these events.
Yeah, that's such a great point, and something that, you know, journalists often try to do, sometimes don't always do as well, is bring those actual people who are experiencing the policies, not just the people who are implementing them, to talk about it. I guess, Melissa, that brings me back to you, because as a social studies teacher, how do you think these firsthand accounts of historical events help students understand them better?
Yeah, I think that all the topics that we're looking at can technically be studied, you know, by doing book research or, you know, online research. And as Krishna mentioned, there is some of that goes on before the students do the interview so that they're prepared and have some background and can ask deeper questions. But I think not all of the students that stay involved in the project talk very passionately about how just as Krishna said, hearing these personal stories just, like, makes such a difference, you know, to be able to hear the emotion in people's voice. Like, you know, when Ada Derhemi is talking about standing in that line at 2 a.m, the milk line, you know, you really can't substitute a textbook, you know, which would have a line or two that says people waited in long lines for goods, you know, with that personal story that she was able to convey to the students. And I also think it makes everything not feel so distant. For the students, the Cold War does feel very far away. It's in the history books for them. Whereas I grew up, I was about my students' age, actually, when the Berlin Wall came down. And so I have memories still of this time period, but my students don't have that personal connection. But to be able to sit down and talk, you know, face to face with people that you know, are still alive and still have a lot of stories to share, I think really helps them realize, like, wow, this didn't happen that long ago.
Yeah, same. I remember, it just came to me, there was a chunk of the Berlin Wall in a display case in my junior high school.
Oh, wow.
Just about a minute remaining. Melissa, what's next for the project? You mentioned women's history?
Right now we are in production for a project, actually Deesa's involved in that, and Krishna, Technology and Society. That's the one that'll come out next, and that was kind of inspired by the AI revolution that's going on, but the students are curious to better understand how technology has changed over the lifetimes of older Americans. And then this year we're focusing on women's rights and women's history, so... And those Excellent. Interviews will happen later this spring.
Fascinating. Well, we look forward to hearing them. Melissa Shepline is a social studies teacher at Uni High, where Deesa Baryshnikov and Krishna Jarwal are students. Jaswal, excuse me. Thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you so much. It's so much fun.